So, following up on the morning session we had, we now have a bit of time to share what actually has been discussed so that everyone has an idea what happened in the various groups. I hope you did enjoy the morning tea break, which happened exactly how tea breaks are supposed to be. You start chatting about one subject and then it's so interesting that you don't go and don't leave it until you feel that it's done. And vice versa, when you feel like, oh no, I don't have anything to learn or contribute, I choose something else. So I hope that all learned or contributed something or both this morning. So I would invite the hosts of the various groups or somebody who took notes or was present to give a short presentation of maybe 5 minutes, more or less. I'll be very rude and interruptive. I think it goes on too long though. But make it concise so that we grasp the gist of it and not reflect and take us through it in a short time so we have time for everything else, and then we'll wrap it up afterwards with a sharing session, and then we'll hand over to the organizers of the bridge team and close this first bridge collaboration week. So who would like to start? Which group is, well, one person of a group ready to give us an introduction to what happened? Lovely. It always takes a brave one to sit next to me and just thank you.
Okay, so we were our first a big group around a big table about research in education, and we decided to split up the group in two because it was so big. So I ended up taking hosting another table. And louder, sorry. Okay. I want to express that very quickly. I felt a bit disappointed because I wanted to know what was happening at the other table at the same time as my table, and I couldn't be a bee because I was a horse. But anyway, so our subject was the informal education that is happening in Orville, mostly for the youth, but also open to other less young and people from, first for the youth of Orville, sorry, but also focusing on the youth of Orville, but also open to other possibilities, which means youth from outside or less young people. The idea is to harvest, collect what is happening in terms, there is a lot of informal education happening in Orville. I'm talking about further education, which means from the age of 17 onward. And there have been many incentives trying to organize, but it's not yet clear what is happening. It's really happening informally. So we would like to gather all these learning opportunities that are happening around Orville, all these learning labs, and have them on a platform, on a database, which would be more accessible for learners and potential providers to get to know each other's needs. We also collect from the Orville youth what it is that could help them. So we want to match student needs with providers from Orville and also from outside Orville. There is, we were told, a number of teachers, very skilled people also out there who are a bit fed up with the traditional faculty, organization, certification and all that, and would be very happy to come to a place like Orville and offer their skill in a less formal way. We would have some online education, mingling, someone was suggesting to mingle universities that are around Orville, not so far, organizing some collaboration, and there is a lot of opportunities for Orwellian as well as for outsiders, to establish a program a bit like the Erasmus program happening in Europe, provide higher education of quality for Orwellian youth and outsiders, that's a bit of a repetition. Get inspiration from what is happening at the Ashram School. There is also some further education happening in the Ashram School with a very small number of students. So see how other we could replicate in Orville or some kind of exchange. Develop, there is a need to develop mentorship and financial support. So this I say, inviting the teachers from outside would be able, very happy to teach you in Orville, and get inspiration from the Thrive University initiative. So then Manish explained to us in great detail lots of projects that are around the Thrive University and the unlearning philosophy, as well as the youth economy. Yeah, all these are So the SWAPAD Permit, if I pronounce correctly, which is like a gap year program. So this is all organized by SRAJ University or by a different organization that Manish initiated, if I can say. And EcoVersity, Gift Culture, Open Source Knowledge, etc. Travelers University. So all these were ideas that I just listed down.
Okay. Thank you very much also for the group and many ideas and contributions that they gave. And we have another group that you mentioned because you were a very vast group in the beginning, so they tackled the same topic, and I'm very curious to hear from them how their discussion went. So who is there to give us a brief introduction?
We have
a map. We have one.
Is on your table,
we don't have much notes on there. I think mostly it's what you put on.
I can do
a few
notes.
Yeah. You can hold it.
Hold that.
You'll
help me,
right? From the side?
Yeah. So we started jumping to solutions and ideas for what a university could look like or what a collaboration might look like. And then we decided to step back and ask some more general questions because we weren't going to come to fantastic solutions instantly, and we didn't want to kind of lock ourselves down to those solutions. So we did that divergent thinking phase, and we pulled it back for questions, which seemed to be around four general abstractions. So the first one was, how can research be valuable to Oroville and the bioregion? And the bioregion was an important part of it. So how could it be valuable? It could be valuable if we got funds, if there was a longevity. There was some discussion that the research has no longevity, people come and go, and there's not enough sharing happening. There was the issue of inclusiveness. How do we include more people? And how perhaps we can make it valuable, research valuable in Oroville by giving scholarships and partnerships for and opportunities for people doing research here. And another question, what kind of research do we want to have here? And there was some discussion of kind of creating some sense of what the research strengths are and selling them completely differently or framing them completely differently. In our next group, we also talked about things like, the center for Jugaad grassroots innovation. So that was one question. The second one, which is part of the bigger picture question, I think, which is how can we make a more unusual collaboration? Because we don't want it to be a stock standard collaboration. We want something to be really different. We want to be involved in making new forms. And part of that is, like, do we just make a collaboration with universities when the university sector itself is changing dramatically? And they themselves are thinking about collaboration much more broadly. Like, they want to collaborate with industry partners, with other universities, with community groups, and with government. And how could we transform the collaboration so that that bigger picture of collaboration is present, and you could work with universities who are also working with governments, so you could get other governments involved in a kind of international zone which is broader and more kind of useful to the mission of Oroville. The next one was, so that was about how research will be valuable to Oroville and Orovillians. This third question was, how can research in Oroville be useful for humanity? So this was the outward-facing side of the research, and we had some individuals suggest that actually the consciousness experiment is what the universities need, and industry partners and governments, and that would be really useful, the contemplative learning for our education institutions outside of Oroville all around the world. And what else does Oroville have that's really useful for humanity? The lab environment is a testing ground, a place that's ready to take an experiment, ready to fail, ready to try things out. And actually having that as an offering could be really useful. And then also there was this question around how can research in Oroville be useful for humanity? An outward-facing questioning around what kind of research is needed and how can Oroville be a part of that and facilitate it. And then we went on to discuss with our discussion of journals how a journal could be most useful to. The fourth bit, if that was how Oroville could benefit and how humanity could benefit, this fourth question was all around the process of research the actual research itself and what needs to be done. And there's lots of discussion around connectivity of researchers. People don't understand what the connections are between the different researchers. So perhaps there's an opportunity for some transdisciplinary facilitation here and some understanding of how connections can be built between fields of study. Again, the question of longevity in the process of research. And an important aspect, which was the data collection, there's a kind of leakage of discovery, the discovery leakage in Oroville that we discussed having a platform to try and capture with a sponge, if you like. Pragmatic. There were lots of questions around pragmatics. And I think this is all discussions for a later day, but it's good to frame it. How to do it? How are we going to get funding? How are we going to get housing for the researchers? How are we going to host them? And all of those important questions around the practicalities of hosting a research institution that is more unusual and offers a real need for the world. And of course, we also talk about some of the problems of being in this field around, you know, we don't want to become a goldfish bowl where people come and study or a little too much. And people who had hosted a lot here talked about a kind of, where's the architect from? Who's had 10,000 students come and talked about a kind of hosting exhaustion. So there were, how do you avoid the issues and how do you really offer something and yet gain something at the same time? How do you frame your value proposition? Seem to be around, you know, the contemplative learning and the experimental laboratory that we can offer. That's it.
So thank you for that. So we have a clarity that there are two groups. One, they dived into the topic at hand in more different versions, I would say. So we have the diversity there, and it's the same topic. So bringing those two together is something very interesting, I guess, for the future and the next steps. So we had another group in the first round that was, where do ideas come from? Do you have something to share with us? A little bit?
It'll be quite short.
That's okay. It's not about length, it's about content. Sometimes.
It was about ideas and also actions. So we all agreed that it was coming from non-mental a space where the mind is quiet. And somebody just said, just let it happen. And that's very, very important, that the space, the very creative space from where all is emerging, this the source, you can call it whatever you want. So I'd just like to quote a little bit, show you, it's very short. He said, the first necessity is to believe in yourself. The second, in God. The third, to believe in Shakti, life. So, all arts or whatever could develop those kind of confidence would be much appreciated, and I'm sure, because Chauvinot also said that you start with the will will give you sat, will give you the pure existence infinite. If you start with this, I'm pretty sure we'll agree that the actions, the idea will be at their correct place.
Very much that's it on the first subject.
The second subject is participatory governance. Mm-hmm. Is it okay?
Yeah, if you took the notes, but then
yeah,
also
a few notes.
You were part of the group, no?
No, we were in another group.
Okay.
No, we were.
You didn't know that there is one.
That's how a tea break happens. People chat about the same thing and nobody knows. <Yes. laughs>
No, on governance, you see, participatory governance. On governance, as it was said in our group, no? That governance needs time. So it seems that the time factor is very important. Means that you need patience. It needs to be focused. That means you need to express what you want or what is being what is wanted, it's okay, maybe something like that. And you have to look for positive people also to govern. And preferably in the spirit of a coalition in order to generate support. Then of course there is a problem of communication. Because if you want to govern, you will have to communicate. And the problem is twofold. One fold is emission. That means you express yourself, you have, and then the second aspect of it is reception. So that means there needs to be an adjustment of frequency. That means you have to tune from the people who govern to the people who are governed in a certain way. So it's not a one-way process, governance. And this tuning of a frequency, that means you have to speak on the same frequency, preferably. Because all this happens in a universal chaos. And that we have to accept. We are living in a universal chaos. And then, of course, there was the other aspect that is participatory. So participatory means participants. Means also participants who accept to take responsibility for what they say, for what they do, for what they want, for everything. Responsibility. They have to accept failure, as it was said in one of our earlier discussions. And they will have to learn to deal with success and failure. It's not something that you are just granted like that. You have to learn how to deal with these things. And one thing that was added also is you have to accept power. The concept of power. To have the power of action, the power of doing something. Because if you are called in a responsibility of governing and you are not clear with the power concept, then you are powerless. Basically, you are useless. So don't take positions of governance if you are not in the position of accepting power. That is a challenge, but you have to take up that challenge, even if you fail. And then there was this suggestion about a human library. Maybe you want to develop that?
So basically, while discussing with the group, a point came in where a lot of meetings in Norway were happening in a digitalized way. Less and less people are like coming and interacting with each other. So like they mentioned that they had something called like previous meetings and different kind of meetings and general discussions. So to make Oroville, you know, to create spaces which could be like more interactive with travelers, researchers and Oroville. So there was this concept called as human library that started in Copenhagen and Amsterdam, and which is a very huge success over there. So it's like a treating humans as books, and it's basically a collaborative process probably I'd like to develop in the later month. So to have humans as books, borrowing them and knowing their stories and creating a creative space to read them, to know them and discuss on various issues. It could be like a very good thing because Oroville itself is like a human laboratory. So it could be like a human library within a human lab. So if at all you all like the idea, we could initiate it in the coming months maybe and see where it goes.
So we have another group that dealt with the topic at hand, and I'm curious what you came up with. You
own the topic, correct?
So we had a smaller group of 7 or 8 people come together, and we just identified several suggestions about how to increase participation in a representative system or governance system. And yeah, we listed off many of these pieces, how to deal with a larger or smaller system in the democracy decision-making system, what is a non-participatory system, how to get to a larger level, incorporate and scale up for a larger number of people, communication systems to become more inclusive, hearing more voices, including all beings, including kind of the voice of nature and the environment, sharing outside of Oroville, so internally inside of Oroville as well as outside, the kind of presence that you have in meeting, communication outside, support, it's hard because it's moving, tape, archive, group sharing, outside, report processes was a key piece. Choices related to water, so we started going into some concrete issues in Oroville and thinking about how a participatory choice, a process for making choices that is more inclusive and supporting those people could support that process related to water or related to other issues. Coming together to include everyone. So, communication. And then after we identified all these different issues, we went in and focused on 3 that were how decisions are made, the communication system to become more inclusive, and report processes, and identified that even these are connected as pretty much all of these issues were, that essentially that report process, if you're able to report decisions made by the representatives and maybe get a feedback loop where the community and the public is able to share their voice back, giving surveys and increasing that interface between the representatives, that would support the system in becoming more inclusive and support the communication in the system. And ideally include everyone in making those decisions. So after going through all those different issues, I kind of want to solidify a sentence for bringing some of those ideas together. How to support the interface between representatives and the public in at least 2 primary processes. 1, the reporting and feedback loops that draws people in and gets them like the first step in the door. And then a second thing that we talked about was the direct face-to-face interactions where you're able to get large groups to have something come out of it, like we were doing in this exercise in open spaces. A couple key specific techniques that we identified as like something that could bring more people in were bringing in art. So in the events that have happened previously in Oroville, I've heard that 700 people were participating in active residence assembly events where there were music and dancing and childcare, and children were able to be part and around the side of it, and they were able to bring food and other like things to support it in being a holistic experience. And in the reporting and the feedbacks, also making it a more visually understandable thing. So you're able to be drawn in at first glance, like you get this instinct of what would happen instantly. And because this is a participatory process, and I've gone on most of the points, I'd maybe like to give them a couple more to participate in sharing something. I'd also maybe try to get everyone involved using something that I've only just been introduced to once, Can anyone raise their hand if they're up for trying a dragon dreaming exercise?
I would love to have
but we are short in time. So this is something which is nice, but we could continue at a different moment. And if you're interested in experiencing dragon dreaming or that participatory element or other methods, I think you're a good person to contact.
I just add a couple of things.
Okay.
I just want to add, like, in the center of this openness, trust, willingness, like, we also, you know, kept spiraling down into what are some of the foundational principles of relationship so that we can actually be participatory, you know, this interconnectedness and the need for attention on what are the interfaces between things, between ideas, between people, between decisions, between the processes, and how do we come with a willingness and how do we keep that willingness open, because also the system can become closed very quickly. And so keep focusing on what are the qualities as well that we need to bring to it to have it stay participatory and something that is a living thing with the people and the processes that it's talking about.
Maybe we can also say, so here we have a spiral starting with the trust and openness, willingness to initiate the system and interface and that communication between people, and that process kind of spiraling out to giving, sharing those reports and participation, and maybe having those feedback loops and other things. We have this little symbolic flower representing the flowering of what could come out of bringing all those people in together to collaborate.
Thank you so much. I think we have at least one more flip chart that has been written. I think it was probably evaluation, or no, it's plastic education. So someone who was there, two sheets, who could summarize it? Because Ribu is not with us. There are two more. So maybe it's just give an impression if you weren't on that present on time, so that we get a little bit of a glimpse into what you guys discussed.
Forms of evaluation, right? So we're looking at evaluation of programs or evaluation of students. That was the first question.
So we were looking at basically two questions. We're talking about evaluation. What is the intent or purpose? Is it the evaluation of a program or is it the evaluation of the students? And we started questioning what is it that we wanted to evaluate, whether it's the progress of the student or it's during the progress of the course. And measurements in a way so that we avoid any biases between a teacher and a student. So there were certain points that we noted down. Giving the aspect of, you know, fair opportunities to the individual. Also considering that some of the students may have qualities of an introvert, the others may have qualities of an extrovert. So that they don't feel distinguished from the program. Then is evaluation to be considered based on generating a sort of a behavior change? Is that one of the tool or the KPIs to measure evaluation of either the program or the students? Can we measure impact? You know, so where can they go from, you know, from here to where now? Maybe you can add on to even the layering aspect a little bit more, which we spoke about. Mm-hmm. Would you like to do that?
Yes, that was less on the impact, but on the evaluation in general. But what we find often is that evaluations tend to be very disjointed, and that a university department, for instance, would have evaluations of the students by the professors, and the students would evaluate the lecture, and then there would be an evaluation of the department itself by some kind of advisory board or oversight board, and each of those would apply completely disjointed criteria from each other. And we were thinking that if there's thinking here about new ways of going about developing evaluations, it may be wise to develop that so that it's harmoniously set up from the beginning, and so that the evaluations have to do with each other. And around the issue of impact is where we thought there might be a nexus. But how much of an impact is the course having on the student's life, for instance, on the student's education, to really come across how is it preparing the student to make the kinds of impacts that the department is set up to make in terms of the educative system or in the socio-political system, would be more for a traditional university. For a less traditional university, then finding around terms like that where there's really the opportunity to evaluate and The other part that we said was split the evaluation, not only this hierarchy, but it's harmonized across it, but recognize there's two purposes for evaluation. There's the inward evaluation, that is, how good is the student doing, how good is the program doing for itself, as a purpose of helping it develop itself further. And there's the outward evaluation, so that you have something that you can show. So in the common academic system, you need grades that you can show, and you need evaluations of courses that you can show, and you need the funding that the department has gotten, or whatever you use as criteria for evaluating, so that you can show to the outside and place yourself appropriately for funding opportunities.
I think, and there were some certain examples which came across, like one was shared by him on Evergreen University, Olympia, where students had their own evaluation protocol, and otherwise in the STEM land, or with the Ashram school functions, or where you set your own evaluation criteria, the student sets it for himself, and the teacher guides it through. Or even an activity-based evaluation, which was another idea which was suggested. The student comes up with the activity and over five courses of evaluation aspects, you know, please evaluate on that. So, yeah, I guess that's covering it.
Thank you. So, and there was, I think, on the back is the element of the plastics. If there was
yes.
someone present, just to briefly.
Would you like to do this?
Just give us a glimpse into the plastic education.
You were there.
You were there more than.
Yeah, but my name is on this list.
Yes.
I feel guilty now. So, so this was Ribu's project on plastic. My name is here related to loving plastic. So, biggest invention of the 20th century, plastic. We came with the NASA plastic, which is a great Tupperware, so better quality of plastic. I think that is, we want plastic, but that is good plastic in Oroville. And there's the quality of plasticity that comes with plastic, which is an interesting point that was made here. So accept the good plastic, and when we say plastic, we actually mean petroleum-derived products from oil and gas. So that's a very important point to keep in mind. That's actually what is the real problem. And what else do we have? Aware of plastics. We need to be aware of plastics in our lives. Most of us live, and we don't even know where, how much of it is surrounding us. Even on our bodies, even with the clothes we are wearing. And what is that? Alternative? There should be an alternative to plastics. And first, good plastics are thinner, breaks, disposable. So that's, it breaks, it gets all those. These are the bad plastics. The list was here. Zero waste lifestyle. Did you talk about that? I'm not sure now.
So you're talking about out here where people are actually trying to be a zero-waste lifestyle. So where at the beginning of the program, because he's coming up with a program on plastics, at the beginning of the program, people can evaluate or be more aware of their plastic consumptions in day-to-day life. And then towards the end of the program, can we measure another way of, you know, how much has the reduction been? So this was one of the aspects that can children quantify how much they can reduce. Start observing where and where we can use plastics, you know, we were talking about toothbrushes or toothpaste, and their daily aspects of where we're using it. And there's much more of a need in education, even in the advertisement sector, of how things are governing it, because it's not only plastics, it's the whole idea of consumerism, you know, and how it's basically talking about increasing consumerism by rendering the previous things obsolete. You know. So the whole idea about how advertisements need to be looked at.
And how to turn plastic to oil. So there was also a very interesting thing, can plastic be turned back to oil? So is some research on that, on science, scientifically to do that? What else am I reading?
The other thing was transparency in data availability, which helps the content for education. Problem is also, the solution was one of the aspects, supply chain influence on plastics. Or LCA, because there are a lot of LCAs which are done between cotton and alternatives. So, you know, the supply chain influence. Yeah.
Well, you were talking about how the cloth bag is not necessarily better than the plastic.
Yeah,
can you just sell
there was one example which we came across where we did a study where we said that the cotton bag is actually not in the entire life cycle of it better than a plastic bag, but that's mainly because there's a certain composition of the transportation sector. So at least getting all this data in place when we are educating it so that people start getting aware of it. It's usually the lighter the material, the better environment friendly it is, and that's the synonym around it. It doesn't take into care the end of disposable aspect, and that should, which is the issue which plastic is dealing with. So yeah, it's awareness and education, I guess.
That's all.
That's plenty. Thank you very much. So I hope you all realize, because you all contributed, so there is an I in collectivity. We all can only come up with everything if we all participate and are part of it. I would like you now to invite you to the final sharing, as we do it here in Oroville. For that, I'd start with maybe 10 seconds of silence. And afterwards, I'll give you, or maybe into the silence, I'll give you three questions you can see and see that if you want to share something, feel free. Maybe keep it to a sentence, two or three, so that everybody has a chance to share and we still honor the place and can make room for the next group to start. So the questions are, during the past days, we started on the 22nd of February, we had our opening, we came then to conscious collectivity, we explored harmony from diversity, we dove into unending education. We explored arts in diverse forms and now had a collaborative session. And from all these days, think of something that truly touched you. Think of something that you learned. And maybe there's something that will stay with you when you go back to your home, to your own projects. Maybe something where you think, okay, I'd like to take this up. I would like to continue that. Just see what comes. Whoever would like to share something, I give you the mic.
So something that touched me. I feel that there was a sense of camaraderie here in a conference that is spectacularly different from most academic conferences, and a sense of spirit and meaning and purpose that were very different to any other academic conferences I've been to, as well as being in the environment of Oroville. So that touched me deeply. And how I would describe it, the word, we've done a lot of communicating over the last few days, and but it's been high level and internal, moving communication a lot of it. And so it's been about the word union in the middle of the word communication, because it has that in its core. So that's what it was for me. Something I learned, perhaps this is just recency bias, and you told me to say, because I learned many things, but over lunch just now, listening to Surya Maya talking about her thesis and the current notion that utopias aren't about perfection, they're about a kind of progress, is that right? And an acceptance that you're trying. And I think that that was very evocative for me, for what Oroville does. And something that will stay with me, again, probably recency bias, but that nice visual of the spiral that you were showing. And immediately I thought, yeah, the person, the human being, the inner being is at the beginning of that spiral, and then everything sort of spans out, and it could be a kind of, it is a metaphor, that spiral form for Oroville because of the city plan and everything, but the idea that this is a spiraling out, so plastics is not the cause, but actually the bigger cause is consumerism, that the underlying causes that actually everything is impacted and changed from the center. I thought that was a lovely kind of, you know, something that stays with me.
What touched me was a presentation on the second day about basic income. I mean, a lot of things has touched me, but that touched me very deeply. About that research when 6,000 people living in poverty was included, and then that the outcome was that they become generous. And that really touched me. When I was in... I met with some students in a university learning sustainability, and I was looking in their eyes, they were like 22 years old, and I was speaking to them about basic income, and they said, that's stupid, that's nonsense. What you should do, you should work for money, and then you will have time to spend that money, or you have the money to spend it on what you would like to do. So it was very nice to have this experience that how much basic income can really change people, especially those who are in deep poverty and especially the masses.
So I was touched by many things. There were several individual talks that touched me, but I think that what touched me the most was the vast degree of sincerity and authenticity that ran through all of the sessions, through all of the talks, through the participation, through the discussions, and what I see in Orville itself, of a really sincere desire and a great authenticity, not trying to show something, but really trying to do something and recognize the limitations and the willingness even to be authentic and talking about, hey, we're not going to put on a show and tell you it's all perfect here. There's lots of problems and lots of troubles. And what I learned then was, again, many things, individual things about the ways that we can move forward with sustainability. But what I think I learned the most was that there's a group of young people here who grew up in this community who are incredibly enthusiastic about it and who managed to weave together a conference. And I learned that a conference like this could be woven together in a way that has the characteristics of an academic conference and the characteristics of a spiritual exchange. And in the end, still can bring it together to where we had some very concrete outcomes that come out of that. And what I take away from this is hope. Hope for Oroville. I think it's got a great future ahead of it, and hope for community on the whole, that if a community like this can form, then there's hope that more communities like this can form, and that many communities that are different than this can learn from this around the world.
Now, two personal comments. One is, what I appreciate is feeling pushed up by the new generations of Oroville. And for me, it's a fantastic feeling because it feels like I spent all my life like a locomotive, you know, like pulling, pulling, pulling. I don't know why. But then suddenly I feel pushed up, you know, and feels good. And the second thing is yesterday when Desmond Lazaro showed us his colors, to realize that it was my body responding to the beauty of those colors. It was a vibration inside my body. I was amazed. That was responding to the beauty of those colors. And my body was there. I want to paint, I want to paint. It was amazing.
Negative don't exist in Oroville first. But
in my personal story, this vision, because the vision of the of this gathering come from me, and by chance you are the youth to carry. Rather that reconnect me with the beginning of Halloween, when we arrive with this joy, with this sharing, with this joy, I would say joy, is the most important. What I feel, and for me something is missing in this story, we never speak about why Halloween. And sometimes I have the feeling we are mixing Halloween with a lot of experience in the world are valuable, that's no problem, but it's not Halloween. And that I have a question mark. And I hope one day we will have a real gathering to what Halloween, what is Halloween, why he has been created, and what we are doing here. Of course, each other of us has his personal path. And we are not, as somebody said, we are still newcomers. And also what I feel, and that's what I know very well, what I feel uncomfortable is always the dichotomy between the youth and the pioneer, I would say. Because if you read the chapter, that doesn't exist. Of course, we have the body take age or whatever, but the mind or the spirit, most of the time, I would say, the pioneers are more young of the youth. Not all, but a lot of time.
What I want to express first is a huge gratitude. I feel very blessed to have been part of this session, and I was just overwhelmed by the openness and the quality of the presentations and by all the people involved. This was such a wonderful experience. So thank you all. What I want to share was a thought that I had during one of the presentations. I think it was about education. And I wanted to draw a parallel between evolution in Darwinian sense in biology and evolution of us as a species, as mankind, or supermanhood, as you also heard. So what is needed for evolution in a Darwinian sense are basically three elements. It's diversity, which is in biology created by random genetic mutations. Then there needs to be natural selection. So in a changing environment, some mutations will be beneficial for a species and others will be not. And the third element is the element of heredity. So passing on heredity, I don't know if it's correct. So these traits have to be passed on to the next generation. And we have all those three elements, so it is evolution. So in a human context, I think education can, as was said, play a very important role in diversity with a focus on creativity. That's where complexity is created, and so I was amazed to see that also coming back throughout different presentations. And then I think collective conscious collectivity will foster the selection of certain traits. And also the passing on to newer generations. And I think that's how we as a human species will then eventually evolve. And we have, I think, and that's the important part of it, is we have real power in there with our conscience, with our consciousness.
I was impressed by so many of the presentations and the discussions, and sometimes I'm so amazed at how far, how deep that people can go in their particular areas and what they've accomplished. But some of the few things that really touched me this time was some of the discussions around being grounded in the earth. Like I had never heard from Jas before, or Krishna, or Sat Prem. And so that grounding in our earth and in the very just kind of a simple natural life, I think it's something, you know, I tend to be much more involved in, you know, like mental pursuits and things, and I think many of us are. And it's nice to be reminded that, you know, over the long term, that people live, you know, much closer to the soil than we are now, and that part of what's gone wrong is getting away from that. And just maybe one other small thing was that in some ways I feel like myself and many of us still get caught up in our own particular specialities, and we don't know what's going on around us and some of the things that are being done. For example, I lived across the road almost from Jas for a year, and I really didn't know, you know, like what was going on there. And some of the speakers also mentioned, you know, that, you know, they have difficulty just sharing their expertise and their accomplishments within Oroville. That there's often some kind of disconnect between the people still, even in Oroville, from some of the things that are going on here. So that's just something to consider.
What touched me most was the atmosphere of the conference and the way the discussion. I mean, I was bit skeptical when there were preparatory meetings for the bridge. I didn't want to go to just another conference because I find there's a lot of just mental discussion, and I was like, do I really want to go? So when I came first, I was like, okay, I'll just go one day and then I'll see. So I even sat in the back, I didn't even come in the room. But then I saw even like the presentations, but the discussion also, they were really not just from the mind, definitely. So that really touched me. The other thing that really touched me was Mark's comment about the principle of Aikido. Even in apparently negative situation, you try to improve the balance. And I was like, wow, that's, I mean, you are a director in an institute, so scientifically somebody can, I can respect, but also like this. And also in quite a few of the researchers, I felt that there is this combination. I had a bit turned my back on the research world, the academic world, 5-6 years ago. And now it makes me feel hopeful again that, okay, so there is a possibility of different kind of work and different kind of research. So, yeah, it's been a very positive experience. Thank you.
If we have one more, and then it's, unfortunately the time is running, and yes, it is, so we make it a final sharing for the moment, but I would encourage you to share amongst each other if we don't have time to do it in the big room.
I was just going to say thank you to the organizers and to everyone who participated in so many different ways. And for me, what was really rich and valuable about this whole experience was both the holistic approach and the connections among all the different activities, not just the academic, you know, the presentations, but then all the other parts of the whole week that was organized, and also just a real open space for thinking about radical, provocative ideas. And I think that's, it seems, you know, obviously Oroville provides that, but for us as visitors to come here and have this space to really explore and think about things in a very different way. And I've learned a lot, and it's been really a great, and for me, obviously, it's great to be able to share it with my 17-year-old daughter, too. So that's a gift. So thank you.
Before handing over the mic to the organizers, I would like to close this session due to time by inviting you to stand up again, because we've been sitting a lot, sharing a lot. And I would like you to do three things with me. First of all, we all close our eyes very, very, very tightly. And I open them very wide. Then turn around and see what all everything there is in the room. 360 degrees. And when you're back at the point where you started, place your hand on your heart. And now I can, you, everyone can truly say this conference, first of all, it opened your eyes, it changed your perspective, and it touched your heart. Thank you.
We would also like to thank all our guests who have flown very far to come here. So, thank you so much. As a kind of sharing as from the point of view of the organizers, I mean, for me, just the whole bridge, developing the concept was all very theoretical, and we were just pulled into the whole organization, but over the last days I've really felt the bridge becoming much more tangible, and I'm really grateful to all of you for doing that, and we hope that the bridge will continue in many ways, and thank you for coming. That concludes the bridge for now. And we hope to see you all very soon. There will be tea now here, and then we will be going to the poetry session at the Savitri Bhavan.
I'm sure I'm speaking for all the people who've flown here. From the bottom of my heart, it was such a privilege. And thank you for inviting us and for hosting us. The hosting was extraordinary. And I know it took a lot of time because I've done that company myself, and I'm just so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.